So just as every year, the three cycles, the first Sunday of Lent is always a temptation narrative from Matthew, Mark, or Luke, so the second Sunday is always this transfiguration narrative. And there are slight differences in the three versions, but they pretty much basically say the same thing. And we don't know what's going on here, really, historically. The best scholarly opinion, the most common scholarly opinion, is that this is a kind of retrojection of some Easter faith or post-resurrection faith into the life of Jesus. So we're not talking about historical events. So we have to look even more closely to find out what is Luke trying to say here? And there are all kinds of keys, not only in the Lucan, but in the other two versions as well. This business of having your face shining and your clothes turning dazzling white is a typical description of what is called the eschatological state. This is the end time, that everybody's going to be transformed in this fashion. When God closes down the whole operation. And of course, as I said a couple of weeks ago, the resurrection for these Jews did not mean that God proved that Jesus was divine or Jesus proved himself divine by rising from the dead, but rather the resurrection was the beginning of this final stage of human history that was brought to completion in Jesus, who fulfilled totally what God had in mind for us human beings. And the rest is just supposed to follow, if you will, logically. And the figure of Moses and Elijah are also eschatological figures. That is, there was this tradition that a new Moses was going to appear right before the end of time. And Elijah, of course, was a guy who was taken up to heaven in the fiery chariot, who was going to return. So this is what we're talking about. We're talking about what God had in mind, where somehow the kingdom was going to be realized. And Jesus was simply the first fruit. Jesus is the man who was absolutely available to everybody else, who could be trusted by everybody else. And therefore we had the beginning of the kingdom of God, the human community. But the context here is extremely important. Right before this passage, we have Jesus talking about getting killed. Now, were these kind of predictions, or was Jesus smart enough to know that all the prophets had come to a bad end? Everyone had been murdered. You may remember that passage in Matthew. Jesus talking to the Pharisees, you cleared the board from A to Z, Abel to Zechariah. They're all gone. They're all murdered because we cannot stand to hear this word. We cannot stand to have our normal view of the world and the way things work challenged. And so we get rid of the challenge. So it's this interesting juxtaposition of the final state of things and where we are right now. And of course, the transitional process is marked by suffering, essentially. The process of being transformed from my normal self-absorbed, self-engrossed, self-protecting, self-preserving self to this utterly porous self. The self is connected in every direction to everybody. So this is why this is set at the beginning of Lent, I assume. They want to say, well, this is, folks, we're going. Not as some kind of reward. We've overplayed this reward business in Christianity, something terrible, I think. The reward is a full life. That's the reward. And the full life means life with everybody else. But we are, as that Auden poem has it, in the middle of things, huh? For the time being, verbs to memorize, you know. Schedule to keep, blah, blah, blah. The time being to redeem from insignificant. And the only way the time being can be redeemed from insignificant is because of where we are and who we are, is by this painful transformative process, the cross, if you will. So, as I suggest, that Lent is a time to simply do what we're supposed to be doing as would-be Christians all the time anyway, trying to figure out who we are and where we are in the world. And here, the specific question that's raised, because last week we were asked to think about what really tempts us, what really tempts us. Here, we're invited to ask, what really makes me suffer? What really makes me suffer? I mean, everybody suffers. You can't get away from it. The Buddha had it right. Life is suffering. But it makes all the difference in the world as to what makes you suffer. All the difference in the world as to what causes pain. And so, for us, it's a chance to say, well, I'm pained because I forgot the wine, and had to wait at the red light, you know, blah, 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 Western Road, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-mm. No. Do I suffer from all those obtuse places in my life, or would rather ignore myself or others? Where I'm preoccupied with my own self-preservation instead of the massive injustices in the world. Do I suffer from that? Well, that's what we're supposed to be asking ourselves now. And that's what this reading is about. How am I to be transfigured? How am I to be transfigured?